This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Battle Royale by Kushun Takami. Read by Mark DeCascos.
I dedicate this to everyone I love, even though it might not be appreciated. A student is not a tangerine. Kenpachi Sakamoto, third year class B, Kenpachi Sensei. But tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. Bruce Springsteen, born to run. It's so hard to love. Motoharu Sano, it's so hard to love. During all those last weeks I spent there, there was a peculiar evil feeling in the air. An atmosphere of suspicion, fear, uncertainty, and veiled hatred. You seem to spend all your time holding whispered conversations in corners of cafes and wondering whether that person at the next table was a police spy. I do not know if I can bring home to you how deeply that action touched me. It sounds a small thing, but it was not. You have got to realize what was the feeling of the time, the horrible atmosphere of suspicion and hatred. George Orwell, Homage to Catalonia. Third year class B, Shiro Iwa Junior High School, student list. Males. 1. Yoshio Akamatsu. 2. Keita Iijima. 3. Tatsumichi Oki. 4. Toshinori Oda. 5. Shogo Kawada. 6. Kazuo Kiriyama. 7. Yoshitoki Kuninobu. 8. Yoji Kuramoto. 9. Hiroshi Kuranaga. 10. Ruhei Sasagawa. 11. Hiroki Sugimura. 12. Yutaka Sito. 13. Yuichiro Takeguchi. 14. Sho Tsukiyoka. 15. Shuya Nanahara. 16. Kazushi Niida. 17. Mitsuru Numai. 18. Tadakatsu Hatagami. 19. Shinji Mimura. 20. Kyoichi Motobuchi. 21. Kazuhiko Yamamoto. Females. 1. Mizuo Inada. 2. Yuki Utsumi. 3. Megumi Ito. 4. Sakura Ogawa. 5. Izumi Kanai. 6. Yukiko Kitano. 7. Yumiko Kusaka. 8. Kayoko Kotohiki. 9. Yuko Sakaki. 10. Hirono Shimizu. 11. Mitsuku Saoma. 12. Haruka Tanizawa. 13. Takako Chigusa. 14. Mayumi Tendo. 15. Noriko Nakagawa. 16. Yuka Nakagawa. 17. Satomi Noda. 18. Fumio Fujiyoshi. 19. Chisato Matsui. 20. Kaori Minami. 21. Yoshimi Yahagi. Introduction. A pro wrestling fan's rant in an alternate world. What? Battle Royale? What's a Battle Royale? Come on, don't tell me you don't know that. Why bother coming to a pro wrestling card then, huh? The name of a move? The name of a tournament? No, a Battle Royale's a pro wrestling match. What? Today? Today here, you mean? No, it's not on today's program. It's only held in large arenas for big events. Look, there's Takako Inui. She's so hot. Oh, sorry. That's right, a battle royale. They're still held in All Japan Pro Wrestling. In a nutshell, let's see, a battle royale is, you know how your usual pro wrestling match is one-on-one or between tag teams? Well, with a battle royale, 10 or 20 wrestlers all jump into the ring, and then you're free to attack anyone, one-on-one or 10 against one. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many wrestlers pin someone down. What? You don't even know what a pin is? Once your back's on the mat, the count goes 1, 2, 3, and you lose. It's no different from a normal match. Wrestlers can also forfeit, and occasionally someone will get knocked out. Oh yeah, and there's the count out. You can also be disqualified by breaking the rules. Most wrestlers lose by falls in a battle royale. Hey, go Takako, go! Go, go! Oh, sorry. In any case, the ones who get pinned or otherwise lose, they have to leave the ring. Fewer and fewer wrestlers remain in the game. There's only two left in the end. Mano a mano, a very serious match. One out of those two will eventually take the fall. Then there's only one player left in the ring, and he's the winner. He wins. He's given a huge trophy and prize money. Get it? Huh? What about wrestlers who've been friends? Well, at first, of course they help each other out, but in the end, they have to fight each other. You have to follow the rules, which also means you get to watch some rare matches. Like way back when the tag team partners Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith were the remaining wrestlers. Same thing happened with tag team partners the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal. In that match, though, one of the guys, I don't remember which one, intentionally went for a countout to let his partner win, a display of comradeship that was kind of a letdown. Oh, you can also team up with players who used to be your enemies, but the moment you think you're teaming up to get rid of someone else, this sneaky friend can suddenly betray and beat you. Let's see, a battle royale I'd like to see now? Well, given how many federations there are, I'd like to see a battle royale between the leaders of each federation. Keiji Muto, Shinya Hashimoto, Mitsuharu Misawa, Toshiaki Kawada, Nobuhiko Takada, Masakatsu Funaki, Akira Maeda, Great Sasuke, Hayabusa, Kenji Takano. Also, Genichiro Tenryu, Riki Choshu, Tatsumi Fujinami, and Kengo Kimura could be in the running. It'd be fun to add Yoji Anjo and Super Delphin. They might actually end up being the last two remaining fighters. For women's, first of all, Takako. Then Aja Kong, Manami Toyota, Kyoko Inui, Yumiko Hota, Akira Hokuto, Bull Nakano, of course Dynamite Kanzai and QT Suzuki, and Hikari Fukuoka, Mayumi Ozaki, Shinobu Kandori, and Chigusa Nagayo, and... what? How could you not know any of them? Did you really come here to watch pro wrestling? Oh, no! Takako, fight back! Takako! Yeah. Prologue. Government Internal Memo 1997, number 00387461, Top Secret. Dispatched by Central Authority Secretariat Special Task Force Defense Supervisor and Battle Experiment Advisor of the Special Defense Army. 2. Supervisor in charge of number 12, 1997, Battle Experiment number 68. Program, May 20, 1815. We have confirmed evidence of an intrusion into the central government operations system. The intrusion was undetected on the date of its occurrence, March 12. We are currently investigating any additional evidence of re-entry. The perpetrator's identity, purpose, and any possible leaks are also being investigated. As the perpetrator's computer skills were highly advanced, we anticipate a significant delay in producing a profile. The Central Authority Secretariat Special Task Force Defense Supervisor and the Battle Experiment Division of the Special Defense Army were informed that data from Program Number 68 may have been corrupted, and as a result, we immediately considered the postponement of Program Number 12 for 1997. However, because preparations for Number 12 are complete, and because there is no indication that the above data have been leaked into the civilian population, we have concluded the program should proceed as scheduled. However, We will reschedule future programs following number 12 as well as implement design changes in Guadalcanal. As the team leader in charge of executing the experiment, you, supervisor of program number 12, are to proceed with extreme caution. Furthermore, this infiltration incident is classified top secret information and is to be treated as such. Part 1. Start game. 42 students remaining.
Chapter 0.
As the bus entered the prefectural capital of Takamatsu, garden suburbs transformed into city streets of multicolored neon, headlights of oncoming cars, and the checkered lights of office buildings. A group of well-dressed men and women stood talking to each other in front of a street-side restaurant while they waited for a taxi. Tired youths squatted and smoked in the clean parking lot of a convenience store. A worker on his bicycle waited for the lights to change at the crossing. It was chilly for a May evening, so the man had put on his threadbare jacket. Along with these other drifting impressions, the worker disappeared behind the bus window, swallowed by the low engine rumble. The digital display above the bus driver's head changed to 8:57. Shuya Nanahara, male student number 15, third year class B, Shiroiwa Junior High School, Shiroiwa Town, Kagawa Prefecture, had been staring outside, leaning over Yoshitoki Kononobu, male student number 7, who had the window seat. As Yoshitoki dug to his bag, Shuya stared at his own right foot, which was sticking out in the aisle, and stretched out his keds with his toes. It used to be that keds weren't hard to find, but now they were extremely rare. The canvas of Shuya's right shoe was torn at the heel, and the stray threads stuck out like a cat's whiskers. The shoe company was American, but the shoes themselves were made in Colombia. It was 1997, and the Republic of Greater East Asia hardly suffered from a shortage of goods. In fact, the region was rich with commodities, but imports were hard to come by lately. Well, it was only to be expected in a country with an official policy of isolationism. Besides, the United States, both the government and the textbooks referred to that country as the American imperialists, was an enemy state. From the back of the bus, Shuya watched his 41 classmates, who were illuminated by dull fluorescent lights fixed in dingy ceiling panels. They had all been in the same class the past 2 years. They were all still excited and chatting away, since hardly an hour had passed since their departure from their hometown of Shiroiwa. Spending the first night of a study trip on a bus seemed a little cheap. Worse yet, it felt like they were going on a forced march. But everyone would calm down once the bus crossed the Sito Bridge, got on the Sanyo Highway, and headed toward their destination, the island of Kyushu. At the front of the bus, sitting around their teacher, Mr. Hayashida, was a group of noisy girls. Yuki Utsumi, female student number 2, the class representative, looked good with braided hair. Next to her was Haruka Tanizawa, female student number 12, Yuki's exceptionally tall volleyball teammate. Izumi Kanai, female student number 5, was a preppy whose father was a town representative. Satomi Noda, female student number 17, was known as a model student. She wore wire-rimmed glasses which suited her calm, intelligent face. Then there was Chisato Matsui, female student number 19, who was always quiet and withdrawn. They were the mainstream girls. You could call them the neutrals. Girls tended to form cliques, but there weren't any particular groups that stuck out in Shiroiwa Junior High School's third year class B, so categorizing them didn't seem right. If there was a group, it was the rebel, or, to put it more bluntly, the delinquent group led by Mitsuko Sama, female student number 11. Hirono Shimizu, female student number 10, and Yoshimi Yahagi, female student number 21, rounded out that bunch. Shuya couldn't see them from where he was sitting. The seats right behind the driver were slightly raised, and popping up above them were the heads of Kazuhiko Yamamoto, male student number 21, and Sakura Ogawa, female student number 4, the most intimate couple in the class. Maybe they were laughing because their heads shook slightly. They were so insular that the most trivial thing could have been entertaining them. Closer to Shuya, in the aisle, was a large school uniform belonging to Yoshio Akamatsu, male student number one. He was the biggest kid in the class, but he was the timid type, the kind of kid who'd always end up the target of pranks and insults. Yoshia's big body was crouched over his handheld video game, so Shuya only saw the uniform. Also sitting together in the aisle were the jocks. Tatsumichi Oki, male student number 3, handball team. Kazushin Ida, male student number 16, soccer team. And Tadakatsu Hatagami, male student number 18. Shuya himself had played Little League baseball in elementary school and was known as a star shortstop. Actually, he'd been friends with Tadakatsu, but they'd stopped hanging out. Partly this was because Shuya had stopped playing baseball, but it also had to do with the fact that Shuya had started playing electric guitar, which was considered an unpatriotic activity. Tadakatsu's mother was uptight about that sort of thing. Yes, rock was outlawed in this country. Of course there were loopholes. Shuya's electric guitar came with a government-approved sticker that read, "Decadent music is strictly prohibited." Rock was decadent music. Come to think of it, Shuya thought, I've changed my friends, too. He heard someone laugh quietly behind big Yoshio Akamatsu. It was one of Shuya's new friends, Shinji Mimura, male student number 19. Shinji had short hair and wore an intricately designed ring in his left ear. Shuya had heard of Shinji even before they became classmates in sophomore year. Shinji was known as the third man, the team's first string shooting guard. His athletic skill was equal to Shuya's, though Shinji would have said, I'm better, bro. Together on the basketball court for the first time in their second year class competition, they made for a deadly combo, so it was only natural they'd hit it off. There was a lot more to Shinji than sports, though. His grades in subjects other than math and English weren't great, but his breadth of real-world knowledge was incredible, and his views were mature, way beyond those of his peers. He somehow had an answer for any question about overseas, information that couldn't be obtained in this country. And he always knew the best thing to say when you were down, like, you know it, I'm the man. But he was never arrogant. Instead, he'd smile and wink. He was never full of himself. Basically, Shinji Mimura was a good guy. Shinji was sitting next to his buddy from grade school, Yutaka Sito, male student number 12, the class clown. Yutaka must have cracked another joke because Shinji was laughing. Hiroki Sugimura, male student number 11, sat behind them. His tall, lanky body barely fit into the narrow seat. He was reading a paperback book. Hiroki was reserved and studied martial arts, so he projected an aura of toughness. He didn't hang out with the other guys much, but once you got to know him a little, he turned out to be nice. He was just shy. Shuya got along with him. Was he reading that book of Chinese poetry he liked so much? Chinese books in translation were fairly easy to obtain, not surprising considering the Republic claimed China as part of our homeland. Shuya once came across a line in an American paperback novel he'd found in a used bookstore. He managed to get through it with a dictionary. Friends come, and then they go. Maybe that was how things were. Just as he and Tadakatsu were no longer friends, there might come a time when he wasn't friends with Shinji and Hiroki anymore. Well, maybe not. Shuya glanced at Yoshitoki Kunenobu, who was still digging through his bag. Shuya had made it this far with Yoshitoki Kunenobu, and that would never change. After all, they were friends ever since they wet their beds at that Catholic institution with the pretentious name, the Charity House, where orphans or other children who, due to circumstances, were no longer able to be with their parents. You could say they were almost doomed to be friends. Religion was another pertinent topic. In fact, this country, under a unique system of national socialism ruled over by an executive authority called the dictator, Shinji Mimura once said with a grimace, This is what they call successful fascism. Where else in the world could you find something so sinister? Had no national religion. The closest thing to religion was faith in the political system. But this wasn't paired up with any established religion. Religious practice, therefore, was permitted as long as it remained moderate. But at the same time, freedom of religion wasn't guaranteed. So it was only practiced in private by dedicated followers. Shuya himself never really had any religious inclinations, but it was thanks to this particular religious institution that he managed to grow up relatively unscathed and normal. He thought he should appreciate that much. There were state orphanages, but apparently their accommodations and programs were poorly run, and from what he heard, they served as training schools for Special Defense Forces soldiers. Shuya turned around and looked back. The group of delinquents that included Ruhei Sasagawa, male student number 10, and Mitsuru Numai, male student number 17, was sitting on the wide seat at the back of the bus. There was, Shuya couldn't see his face, but he could see between the seats the head with the oddly styled, slicked back, long hair poking out by the right window. Though on its left side, well, it seemed Ruhei Sasagawa had left two seats open in between. The others were talking and laughing over something dirty. The head remained absolutely still. Perhaps he'd fallen asleep. Or maybe like Shuya, he was watching the city lights. Shuya was completely baffled by the fact that this boy, Kazuo Kiriyama, male student number 6, would actually participate in a childish activity like a study trip. Kiriyama was the leader of the thugs in their district, a group that included Ruhei and Mitsuru. Kiriyama was by no means big. At best, he was the same height as Shuya, but he could easily pin down high school students and even take on local Yakuza. His reputation was legendary throughout the entire prefecture, and his father, being the president of a leading corporation, didn't hurt. There were rumors that he was an illegitimate child. Shuya wasn't interested, so he never bothered to find out more. Of course, that wouldn't have been enough. He had a handsome, intelligent face, and his voice wasn't particularly low, but there was something intimidating about it. He was the top student in Class B, and the only one who barely kept up with him was Kyoichi Motobuchi, male student number 20, who studied so hard he didn't get much sleep. In sports, Kazuo Kiriyama was better and more graceful than almost anyone else in the class. The only ones at Shiroiwa Junior High who could compete with him seriously were, yes, the former star shortstop Shuya and the current star shooting guard Shinji Mamura. So in every respect, Kazuo Kiriyama was perfect. But then how could someone this perfect end up the leader of a gang? That was really none of Shuya's business. But if there was one thing Shuya could tell, it was a sense, almost tactile, that Kazuo was different. Shuya couldn't exactly say how. Kazuo never did anything bad in school. He'd never bully around someone like Yoshio Akamatsu the way Ruhei Sasagawa did. But there was something so remote about him. Was that it? At least that was how it felt. He was absent a lot. The idea of Kazuo studying was completely absurd. In every class, Kiriyama remained quietly seated at his desk as if he were thinking of something that had nothing to do with class. Shuya thought, if the government didn't have the power to enforce compulsory education on us, he probably wouldn't come to school at all. On the other hand, he might just show up on a whim. I don't know. In any case, Shuya would have expected Kazuo to skip something as trivial as a study trip, but then he promptly showed up. Was this on a whim, too? Shuya. Shuya was staring at the ceiling panel lights, wondering about Kiriyama, when a perky voice interrupted his thoughts. From the seat across the aisle, Noriko Nakagawa, female student number 15, offered him something wrapped in crisp cellophane. The bag sparkled like water under the white light, and it was filled with light brown discs. Cookies. On top was a bow tied with a gold ribbon. Noriko Nakagawa was another girl who was a neutral, like the ones in Yuki Utsumi's group. Other than her kind eyes, which were noticeably dark, she had a round, girlish face and shoulder-length hair. She was petite and playful. In short, she was an average girl. If there was something particular about her, it was probably the fact that she wrote the best compositions in literature class. This was how Shuya got to know Noriko. Shuya would spend break periods writing lyrics for his songs in the margins of his notebooks, and Noriko would insist on reading them. She usually hung with Yuki's group, but because she'd shown up late today, she had no other choice but to take an open seat. Shuya half extended his hand and raised his brow. For some reason, Noriko became flustered and said, "They're leftovers from the ones my brother begged me to bake. They're best fresh, so I brought them for you and Mr. Nobu." Mr. Nobu was Yoshitoki Kunenobu's nickname. Although he had bulging, friendly eyes, the nickname seemed appropriate for someone who could be, oddly enough, mature and wise. Most of the girls called him by his proper name, but Noriko had no problem calling the boys by their nicknames, and the fact that this hardly offended any of them indicated how uniquely disarming she was. Shuya had a sports-related nickname, the same name as a famous cigarette brand, but in the same way that Shinji was referred to as the third man, no one used it to his face. Shuya had noticed this before, but he was reminded that Noriko was the only girl to call him by his first name. Yoshitoki, who'd been listening in on them, interrupted. "Really? For us? Thanks so much. If you made them, I bet they're delicious." Yoshitoki snatched the bag from Shuya's hand, quickly untied the ribbon, and took out a cookie. "Wow, these are awesome." As Yoshitoki praised Noriko, Shuya grinned. Could he be more obvious? The moment Noriko sat next to Shuya, he'd been repeatedly glancing over at her, sitting upright, completely nervous. It was a month and a half ago during spring vacation. Shuya and Yoshitoki had gone fishing for black bass at the dam reservoir that provided the city its water supply. Yoshitoki confessed to Shuya, "Hey Shuya, I got a crush on someone." "Huh? Who is it?" "Nakagawa."
"You mean from our class?"
"Yeah."
"Which one? There are two Nakagawas. Yuka Nakagawa?
Hey, unlike you, I'm not into fat girls."
"What the?
So you're saying Kazumi is fat?
She's just a little plump."
"Sorry. Anyway, well, yeah, it's Noriko."
"Huh?"
"Well, she's nice," Shuya said.
"Isn't she, though? Isn't she?"
"All right, all right." Yes, Yoshitoki was totally obvious. But in spite of his behavior, Noriko seemed oblivious to Yoshitoki's feelings for her. Maybe she was slow with stuff like this or something. It wasn't surprising, given her personality. Shuya took a cookie from the bag still in Yoshitoki's hand and examined it. Then he looked over at Noriko.
"So they lose their flavor?"
"Uh-huh," she nodded, her eyes oddly strained. "Which means you're sure they taste pretty good." He might have learned this form of sarcasm from Shinji Momura. Shuya often used it lately to the dismay of other classmates, but Noriko just emitted a happy laugh and said, "I guess so."
"Come on," Yoshitoki interrupted again. "I told you they were good, didn't I, Noriko?"
Noriko smiled. "Thanks. You're so nice." Yoshitoki all of a sudden froze up as if he jammed his finger into an electric outlet and turned mute. Staring silently into his lap, he proceeded to devour his cookie. Shuya grinned and ate the rest of his cookie. The warm, sweet taste and smell spread through his mouth.
"These are good," Shuya said.
Noriko, who'd been observing him all this time, exclaimed,
"Thank you."
He could be wrong, but somehow the tone of her voice was different than when she thanked Yoshitoki. Well, wait, true.
She was staring at him while he was eating the cookie. Were they really leftovers from the batch she'd baked for her brother? Maybe she'd baked them for someone else. Or maybe he was just plain wrong. Then for some reason, Shuya thought of Kazumi. She was a year ahead and had been a fellow music club member until last year. In the Republic of Greater East Asia, rock music was strictly prohibited in school club activities. But when their advisor, Miss Miyata, was absent, music club members would play rock on their own. That was the kind of membership the club attracted in the first place, anyway. Kazumi Shintani was the best female saxophone player. When it came to rock saxophone, though, she was the best in the entire club. She was tall, almost the same height as Shuya, who stood 170 centimeters, and plump, but with her remarkably mature face and her hair bundled by her shoulders, she looked awesome with her alto sax in her hands. Shuya was thrilled by the sight. Then she taught Shuya how to play difficult guitar chords. She said she played a little before starting the saxophone. From that point on, Shuya spent every spare minute he had practicing his guitar, and by his second year he was the best player in the club. It was all because he wanted Kazumi to hear him play. Then one day, when the two of them happened to be alone in the music room after school, Shuya played and sang a version of Summertime Blues, which impressed her. "That was so great, Shuya. That was so awesome," she said. That day, Shuya bought a can of beer for the first time in his life and celebrated with a private toast. It tasted great. But 3 days later, when he asked her out, confessing, "I really like you," she responded, "I'm sorry. I'm already going out with someone." She graduated and went to a high school with a music department, along with her boyfriend, which reminded Shuya of his conversation with Yoshitoki at the dam over spring break. After sharing his feelings for Noriko, Yoshitoki asked him, "Are you still hung up on Kazumi?" Shuya answered, "Yeah, I think I'll be hung up on her for the rest of my life." Yoshitoki looked stumped. "But she has a boyfriend, right?" Throwing the silvery lure with all his might, as if throwing a ball in from the outfield, he answered, "That doesn't matter." Shuya took the bag of cookies from Yoshitoki, who was still staring down into his lap. "Are you going to leave some for Noriko?" Oh yeah. I'm sorry." Shuya returned the bag to Noriko. "Sorry about that." "That's all right. I don't mind. You guys should take them all."
"Really?
But we shouldn't be the only ones." Shuya took his first glance at the guy sitting next to Noriko. Wrapped in his school uniform, Shogo Kawada, male student number 5, leaned against the window with his arms crossed and his eyes closed. He might have been asleep. His hair was cropped so short he looked like a monk. His slightly stubbled face reminded Shuya of a punk sideshow attraction at a carnival. "Wow, facial hair, everyone. Doesn't he look kind of old for a junior high school student?" Well, there was one thing he knew. Although Class B consisted of the same students as it did the previous year, Shogo Kawada had transferred last April from Kobe, and due to some circumstance, an injury or illness, he didn't look like the bedridden type, so it must have been an injury. Kawada had to stay behind a year because he was unable to attend school for over 6 months. In other words, he was a year older than Shuya and his classmates. Shuya himself never told anyone this, but that was what Shuya had heard. In fact, he hadn't heard good things about Shogo. There was a rumor that he'd been a notorious thug at his last school and that his hospitalization was the result of a fight. His body was covered with scars, which lent the gossip some support. A long scar from what appeared to be a knife wound ran over his left brow, and when they changed in the gym locker room, incidentally, Kawada was built like a middleweight boxer, Shuya was shocked to find the same kind of scars covering his arms and back. There were two round scars next to each other on his left shoulder. They looked like gunshot wounds, but that was unbelievable. Every time you heard these rumors about Shogo, someone would inevitably suggest, "He's probably going to end up fighting Kazuo." Right after Shogo transferred to their school, that fool Ruhei Sasagawa had tried to intimidate him. The exact details of what followed were only hearsay, but apparently Ruhei turned pale, retreated, and went crying to Kazuo for help. Kazuo looked indifferent, though, and only glanced at Ruhei. He didn't even say a word to Shogo. So at least for the time being, they'd managed to avoid a confrontation. Kazuo didn't seem interested in Shogo. Shogo didn't seem interested in Kazuo. As a result, Class B remained peaceful. They lucked out. Everybody avoided Shogo because of his age difference and the rumors. But Shuya didn't like judging people based on rumors. As someone once said, if you could see for yourself, there'd be no need to lend an ear to what others said. Shuya pointed his chin past Noriko toward Shogo. I wonder if he's sleeping. She glanced over at Shogo. I didn't want to wake him up. He doesn't look like the type who's into cookies anyway. Noriko chuckled. And just as Shuya was about to, they heard, no thanks. Shuya glanced back at Shogo. A strong, low voice echoed in his head. Although Shuya wasn't familiar with the voice, it obviously came from Shogo, who still kept his eyes closed, though he didn't seem asleep. Shuya suddenly realized he'd rarely ever heard Shogo speak, even though Shogo had transferred to their school over a month ago. Noriko glanced at Shogo and then looked at Shuya. Shuya shrugged in response and crammed another cookie into his mouth. He continued chatting with Noriko and Yoshitoki for a while until... It was almost 10 o'clock when Shuya noticed something strange. Something weird was happening inside the bus. Yoshitoki, who was on his left, had suddenly fallen asleep and was breathing softly. Shinji Mamura's body was slouching into the aisle. Noriko Nakagawa was also asleep. No one seemed to be talking. Nobody was awake. Well, yeah. Anyone excessively health-conscious might be going to bed now, but still, this was their long-awaited trip. Wasn't it a bit soon after leaving to start falling asleep? Why didn't everyone sing or something? Didn't this bus have one of those atrocious machines Shuya hated? Karaoke? Worst of all, Shuya himself was overcome with drowsiness. He looked around in a daze. Then he couldn't even move his head, which felt heavy. He slouched against the seat. His eyes drifted through the narrow space to the rearview mirror at the center of the large windshield, fading in the dark. He managed to make out the tiny image of the driver's upper body. The driver's face was covered with what appeared to be a mask. A hose-like tube extended downward from the mask. Thin straps were wrapped around his head, strapped above and below his ears. What was that? Except for the hose extending downward, it resembled an airline emergency oxygen mask. So we can't breathe inside this bus? Ladies and gentlemen, this bus will be making an emergency landing due to engine trouble. Like, please fasten your seatbelts, wear your oxygen mask, and follow crew members' instructions. Yeah, right. He heard a scratching sound on the right. Shuya had to struggle to catch a glimpse. His body felt so heavy. It was as if he were immersed in transparent jelly. Shogo Kawada was standing up and struggling to pry open a window, but whether it was jammed shut from rust or a broken lock, the window refused to budge. Shogo slammed his left fist against the glass. He's trying to break the glass. Why all the fuss? But the glass didn't break. The fist, ready to strike the glass a second time, all of a sudden went limp and clumsily dropped. Shogo's body collapsed onto the seat. Shuya thought he heard that low voice he'd only recently familiarized himself with gasp. Damn. Almost immediately, Shuya fell asleep too. At approximately the same time, men in black sedans began their late-night visits to the students' families back in Shiroiwa. Alarmed, the parents must have been more shocked when the visitors presented them with documents stamped with the government's official peach insignia. In most cases, the parents could only silently nod as they thought of the children whom they most likely would never see again, but there were those who protested. They were knocked out by electroshock batons, or in the worst case, ripped apart by fresh bullets spat by a submachine gun, departing from this world one step ahead of their children. By then, the bus assigned to Shiroiwa Junior High School's third-year Class B's study trip had long since branched off from the rows of other buses and taken a U-turn toward the city of Takamatsu. After returning to the city, it wove its way along various roads before it finally stopped and the engine was turned off. The man driving, whose hair was peppered gray, appeared to be in his 40s and looked like a typical nice bus driver. Still wearing the oxygen mask, it was digging into his slightly sagging chin. He turned toward the Class B students with a faint look of pity. But as soon as another man appeared at the window, his face stiffened. He gave the Republic's idiosyncratic salute. Then he pressed the switch to open the door. Shuya glanced outside as the masked men in battle gear came rushing in. Under the moonlight, the bluish-white concrete pier gleamed like bone. And beyond the pier, the ship that would transport the players was swaying sluggishly in the open black sea. 42 students remaining.
Chapter 1.
For a moment, Shuya thought he was in a familiar classroom. It wasn't the usual third-year Class B classroom, of course, but there was a lectern, a worn-out blackboard, and on the left, a tall stand with a large television. There were rows of desks and chairs made of plywood glued onto steel tubes. On Shuya's desk, someone had carved anti-government graffiti into the corner with a pen. The dictator loves women in uniform. Then he noticed everyone at their desks. The boys clad in buttoned-up school uniforms and the girls in their sailor suit school uniforms. All 41 of his classmates who'd only moments ago, at least that was what it felt like, been riding the bus together. The only thing was, either sprawled over their desks or slouched back in their seats, they were all completely asleep. From beside the frosted window on the side nearest the hall, assuming this building had the same layout as his school, Shuya surveyed the rest of the room. He seemed to be the only one awake. In front of him, to his left and toward the middle of the room, was Yoshitoki Kununobu. Behind him was Noriko Nakagawa, and beyond Yoshitoki was Shinji Mamura. They were all splayed over their desktops, sleeping deeply. Hiroki Sugimura's large body lay slumped over a desk by the windows on the left side of the classroom. It finally dawned on Shuya that the seating assignment was identical to the one they had at Shuwa Iwa Junior High School. That was also when he began to realize why the place felt odd. The windows beyond Hiroki's body appeared to be covered with some kind of blackboard. Steel sheets? They provided an icy reflection of the dull light from the rows of fluorescent lights hanging from the ceiling. The frosted glass windows looking out into the hall seemed to be draped in black. Maybe they were boarded up too. It was impossible to determine the time of day. Shuya looked at his wristwatch. It read 1 o'clock. In the morning? In the afternoon? The date read Thursday 22, which meant that, unless someone had tampered with his watch, either 3 or 15 hours had passed since he had that strange attack of drowsiness. All right, let's just assume that's the case, he thought. Still. Shuya looked at his classmates. Something felt off. Of course, the whole situation was strange, but there was something in particular that disturbed him. Shuya immediately realized what it was. Face down on her desk, Noriko had a silver metal band wrapped snugly around her neck, just above her collar. Because of his buttoned-up collar, Yoshitoki Kuninobu's band was barely visible, but Shuya managed to see it. Shinji Mamura, Hiroki Sugimura, everyone had one on his or her neck. Then the thought occurred to Shuya. He reached for his own neck with his right hand. He felt something hard and cold. The same thing must have been wrapped around his neck. Shuya tugged at it a little, but the fit was so tight it refused to budge. The moment he became conscious of it, he felt like he was suffocating. Steel collars? Steel collars as if we're damn dogs? He fidgeted with it for a while, but soon gave up. He wondered instead what had happened to the study trip. Shuya noticed his sports bag sitting by his feet on the floor. Last night he'd casually tossed his clothes, towel, school field trip notebook, and a bourbon flask into it. Everyone else also had their bags by their feet. Suddenly a loud noise erupted from the front entrance, and the door slid open. Shuya looked up. A man came in. He was stocky but well-built. His legs were extremely short, as if they served as a mere appendage to his torso. He wore light beige slacks, a gray jacket, a red necktie, and black loafers. They all looked worn out. A peach-colored badge was pinned to the collar of his jacket, indicating his affiliation with the government. His cheeks were rosy. What stuck out most, though, was the man's hairstyle. He wore it down to his shoulders like a woman in her prime. It reminded Shuya of the grainy Xeroxed cover of a Joan Baez tape he'd bought on the black market. The man stood at the lectern and surveyed the classroom. His eyes stopped at Shuya, who was the only one awake, assuming this wasn't a dream. The two stared at each other for at least a full minute, but perhaps because the other students were waking up, with their nervous breathing gradually spreading through the entire classroom, the man looked away from Shuya. Their voices woke up other classmates from their deep slumber. Shuya looked at the rest of the classroom. As they woke up, their eyes remained out of focus. Everyone was clueless. His eyes met Yoshitoki Kunenobu's as his friend turned back. Shuya pointed at his collar, tilting his neck slightly. Yoshitoki immediately touched his neck. He looked shocked. He shook his head left and right and turned to the lectern. Noriko Nakagawa also looked at Shuya with a dazed look. Shuya could only shrug in response. As soon as everyone seemed awake, the man spoke up in a cheerful voice. "All right, everyone awake? I hope you all slept well." No one replied. Even the class clowns, Yutaka Sito and Yuka Nakagawa, female student number 16, were speechless. 42 students remaining.
Chapter 2.
Wearing a broad grin, the man with long hair continued behind the lectern. "All right, all right. Then I shall proceed with the introduction. First of all, I am your new instructor, Kenpatsu Sakamochi." The man who introduced himself as Sakamochi turned toward the blackboard and wrote his name in large vertical letters with the chalk. Kenpatsu Sakamochi? Was this some kind of joke? Given the situation, maybe it was a pseudonym. Suddenly, the female class representative, Yuki Utsumi, stood up and said, "I don't understand what's going on here." Everyone looked over at Yuki, whose long hair was neatly braided into a pair of pigtails. She looked pretty wound up, but her voice remained assertive. Nonetheless, Yuki was probably deluding herself into believing they'd been in a traffic accident or some other event that caused them to all lose consciousness. Yuki continued, "What's going on here? We were all in the middle of our study trip. Right, everyone?" She turned around and looked at everyone, setting off an avalanche of cries. "Where are we? Did you fall asleep too? What time is it anyway? Was everyone asleep? Damn, I don't have a watch. Do you remember getting off the bus? Coming here? Who the hell is he? I don't remember a thing. This is terrible. What's going on? I'm scared." After observing Sakamochi quietly listening to them, Shuya slowly surveyed the room. There were several others who remained silent. The first one he noticed was sitting at an angle behind him in the back row in the middle. It was Kazuo Kurayama. Beneath his slicked back hair, his calm eyes were staring at the man at the lectern. His look was so calm it didn't even resemble a glare. He paid no attention to his circle of followers, who were anxiously trying to get his attention. Ruhei Sasagawa, Mitsui Numai, Hiroshi Koranaga, male student number 9, and Sho Tsukiyoka, male student number 14. Then there was Mitsuko Sauma, sitting in the second row by the window. She was the one who looked jaded. Her seat was separated from the rest of her group, which consisted of Hirono Shimizu and Yoshimi Yahagi. Of course, none of the other girls, nor boys for that matter, would even attempt to talk to her. On Shuya's left, Hirono and Yoshimi were speaking to each other. Even though Mitsuko had the gorgeous look of a pop idol, she always wore a strange, listless expression on her face. She stared at Sakamochi with her arms folded. Hiroki Sugimura sat right behind her, talking to Tadakatsu Hatagami. Shogo Kawada sat in the second to last row by the window. He was also silently staring at Sakamochi, but he took out a piece of gum and began chewing it, continuing to stare at the teacher as his jaw moved. Shuya looked to the front of the class. Noriko Nakagawa was still staring back at him. Her dark eyes were trembling nervously. Shuya glanced over at Yoshitoki, who was sitting in front of her, but Yoshitoki was busy talking to Shinji Mamura. Shuya immediately glanced back at Noriko, tucked his chin in slightly, and nodded. It seemed to have a calming effect on her. Her eyes seemed to relax a little.
All right, please be quiet.
Sakamochi clapped his hands together several times to get their attention. The clamor suddenly subsided. Let me explain the situation. The reason why you're all here today, then he said, is to kill each other. Now no one responded. Everyone remained frozen, like figures in a still photograph. But, Shuya noticed, Shogo continued chewing his gum. His expression hadn't changed. But Shuya thought he'd caught a glimpse of a faint grin flash across his face. Sakamochi continued smiling and resumed. Your class has been selected for this year's program. Someone shrieked. 42 students remaining. Chapter 3. Every junior high school student in the Republic of Greater East Asia knew what the program was. It was even covered in school textbooks from the fourth grade on. The entry in the more detailed Republic of Greater East Asia Compact Encyclopedia reads, Program, Noun, 1. A listing of the order of events and other information. 4. A battle simulation program conducted by our nation's ground defense forces, instituted for security reasons. Officially known as Battle Experiment No. 68 Program. The first program was held in 1947. 50 third-year junior high school classes are selected annually. Prior to 1950, 47 classes were selected to conduct the program for research purposes. Classmates in each class are forced to fight until one survivor is left. Results from this experiment, including the elapsed time, are entered as data. The final survivor of each class, the winner, is provided with a lifetime pension and a card autographed by the great dictator. In reaction to protests and agitation caused by extremists during the first year of its enactment, the 317th great dictator gave his famous April speech. The April speech was required reading in the first year of junior high school. Here are some excerpts. My beloved comrades working for the revolution and building our beloved nation. 2-minute interruption for the 317th great dictator due to applause and cheers. Now then. 1-minute interruption. We still have shameless imperialists prowling our republic, attempting to sabotage it. They have exploited the people of other nations, nations that should have become our comrades, betraying them, brainwashing them, and turning them into pawns for their own imperialist tactics. Unanimous cry of indignation. And they would jump at the chance to invade the soil of our republic, the most advanced revolutionary state in the world, to carry out their evil scheme to destroy our people. Angry shouts from the crowd. Given this dire circumstance, the number 68 program experiment is absolutely necessary for our nation. Of course, I grieve at the thought of thousands, tens of thousands of youths losing their lives at the ripe age of 15. But if their lives serve to protect our people's independence, can we not claim then that the flesh and blood they shed shall merge with our beautiful soil passed down to us by our gods and live with us in eternity? Applause. A surge of cheering. 1-minute interruption. As you are all aware,
Our nation has no conscription system. The Army, Navy, and Air Special Defense Forces all consist of patriotic souls, young volunteers, every one of them, passionate fighters for the revolution and the building of our nation. They are risking their lives every day and night at the front lines. I would like you to consider the program as a conscription system unique to this country. In order to protect our nation...
Enough already. Right outside the train station, the middle-aged Special Forces recruiter would approach potential candidates with the catchphrase, "How about we go get some pork rice?" Shuya first heard about the program before becoming a fourth grader. He might have been five. It was when he finally got used to the charity house, where he was brought by a friend of his parents after they both died in a traffic accident. All his relatives had refused to take him in. He heard it was because his parents had been involved in anti-government activities, but he never confirmed this story. He was watching television in the playroom with Yoshitoki Kuninobu, who'd been at the charity house before Shuya. His favorite robot anime show had just ended, and the current superintendent of the institution, Miss Royko Ano, the daughter of the former superintendent, at the time she was probably still a high school student, but everyone who worked there was called Mr., Mrs., or Ms., switched the channel. Shuya was just gazing at the screen, but as soon as he saw the man in a stiff suit addressing him, he realized it was only that boring show called The News, the program they showed on every channel at various times. The man was reading from his script. Shuya couldn't remember exactly what he said, but it was always the same and probably went something like this. "We have received a report from the Special Defense Forces and the government that the program in Kagawa Prefecture ended yesterday at 3:12 p.m. It has been 3 years since the last program was conducted here. The subject class was third-year E-class from Zentsuji No. 4 Junior High School. The previously undisclosed location was Shidakajima Island, 4 kilometers away from Todatsu-cho. The winner emerged after 3 days, 7 hours and 43 minutes. Furthermore, with the retrieval of the corpses and autopsies conducted today, the causes of death for all 38 students killed have been determined. 17 from gunshot wounds, 9 from knife or blade wounds, 5 from blunt weapons, and 3 choked to death." An image of what appeared to be the winner, a girl clad in a tattered sailor suit uniform, came on the screen. Pressed between 2 Special Defense Forces soldiers, she looked back at the camera, her face twitching. Under her long, messy hair, some dark red substance stuck to her right temple. Shuya could still clearly recall how her twitching face occasionally formed what appeared to be, strangely enough, a smile. He realized now that this was the first time he'd ever seen an insane person. But at the time, he had no idea what was wrong with her. He only felt inexplicably afraid, as if he'd seen a ghost. Shuya believed he had asked, "What is this, Miss Ano?" Miss Ano only shook her head and replied, "Oh, it's nothing." Miss Ano turned away from Shuya slightly and whispered, "Poor girl." Yoshitoki Kuninobu had already stopped watching a while ago and was preoccupied with eating his tangerine. As Shuya grew older, this same local report, given at the rate of once every 2 years, felt increasingly ominous. From a pool of all third-year junior high school students, 50 classes were issued an annual guaranteed death sentence. That was 2,000 students if each class consisted of 40 students. No. More accurately, that was 1,950 students killed. Worse yet, it wasn't simply a mass execution. The students had to kill each other, competing for the title of survivor. It was the most terrifying version of musical chairs imaginable. But it was impossible to oppose the program. It was impossible to protest anything the Republic of Greater East Asia did. So Shuya decided to give in. That was how most of the third-year reserves from junior high school dealt with it, right? Okay, our special conscription system?
the beautiful homeland of vigorous rice plants? How many junior highs were there in the Republic? The birth rate might be declining, but your chances were still less than 1 in 800. In Kagawa Prefecture,